The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
So, do you dream of feminine leisure? And if so, what would be your dream of it right now?
I dream of any kind of leisure of any gender, any time, any place. A kitchen that is relatively cleaned up and a book that can be read for more than 7 minute stretches at a time.
All I want is to sleep until 8 o'clock in the morning, just once. I just don't even remember what that would be like.
I got to do that, but only because I have a stomach virus.
I think it is interesting how many women I have talked to whose version of leisure is actually entwined with, if not a stomach virus, then something that forces them in bed.
That kind of says it all. This is Impromptu from Washington Post Opinions. It's a new show where we take you into the conversations behind the columns. Each week, we bring in the columnists best suited to meet the news of the moment. I'm Amanda Katz, a senior editor with Post Opinions. Today, we're taking on gender, work, feminism, and the patriarchy through the lens of a trend known as trad wives. That's shorthand for traditional wives. We'll get more into what that actually means in a moment. But first, I'd love my colleagues here to introduce themselves.
My name is Monica Hesse. I'm a columnist with the Style section at the Washington Post, and my particular focus is writing about gender and its impact on society.
I'm Alyssa Rosenberg. I am the Letters and Community Editor of the Washington Post, and before that, I spent a decade as a columnist here at the Post, where I wrote a lot about gender as well.
So, Monica, let's start with a little background for our listeners. Tell us a bit about the piece you just published and what prompted you to write it.
So this piece came about because I noticed that every time I logged onto social media, I was being served up a particular kind of video. And the videos that I was being served up were women who had retreated into these very stereotypical, archetypical, retro housewife sort of roles, but not just a stay-at-home mom, women who had really sort of embraced the patriarchy as a protective stance. So it was women who were not interested in working, not particularly interested in child rearing even, but interested in pursuing a life of leisure, in taking care of their bodies, taking care of their food, taking care of their homes, above all else, taking care of their husbands, taking care of their boyfriends. And I found this really fascinating. I was interested in what might be causing this movement and interested in what that might say about where society is, that this would be an appealing place for women to retreat.
What do you think is the appeal of that? You know, in your story, you talk about the elusiveness of female contentment in the modern era, the elusiveness of rest for everyone in the modern era. Do you think that's the appeal of this?
I think that we are in a perpetual place of trying to figure out for everyone how for men and women to be equal in society, how families can function in society, how society can function as a whole. And it's not a new observation to say that we still haven't figured that out. Anne-Marie Slaughter 12 years ago wrote the famous essay about how difficult it is for women to have it all, because though women are now in the workforce and many in high-powered positions in the workforce, they're still taking on the bulk of home duties. I think we are in a place where many of us have too much to do, not enough time to do it. We haven't figured out the balance of what it should look like. And so I think that for these particular women that I wrote about, they sort of looked at that, decided, I can't have it all, and so I'm going to choose to have none of it, or I'm going to choose to remove myself from certain equations.
Alyssa, what is your take on this? I know that, I mean, I happen to know you as a colleague also, who I think of as both extraordinarily hardworking at work and also a bit of a domestic goddess at home. How do you think about the choice of women who are in this kind of subculture to just prioritize one and abandon the other? How does it strike you?
So it's interesting. I think since becoming a parent, I have become more sympathetic to the idea that there's a lot of satisfaction to be had from staying home. But I also think that, you know, the aesthetic itself can be really attractive, right? And, you know, I don't particularly want to, you know, like do Instagram videos about how I'm getting like my perfect cinch waist so I can wear my gingham dress and my like little frilly blouse. But I do think there is some real satisfaction in making home life beautiful and, you know, talking about the domestic sphere, not just sort of as a source of gender struggle, but as a place that requires a lot of skill to get right. And, you know, I should be very clear. It's like I do a lot of craft projects for like my kids' auction, but I, you know, I also batch cook food once a week. And, you know, it's not like my husband is like coming home, setting down his briefcase and like being like asking what's for dinner. I mean, I think it's very hard to separate out the gender dynamics and the aesthetics, especially in something like the Tradwives trend, where you see, you know, a deliberate conflation of those two, right? The aesthetic is an expression of a positioning to the patriarchy. A lot of the discussions around feminism, around, you know, even policies that are oriented towards, you know, sort of increasing women's labor force participation are all based on the idea that the route through equality is for sort of everyone to be a little bit more masculine, for everybody to work, for women's labor force participation to be high. And domestic life and sort of domestic arts are kind of left out of that conversation.
That's really interesting. I think there is also this kind of other older model, right? And sometimes played for it being a little sinister, like the sort of Stepford Wives model, or more recently there was the movie Don't Worry, Darling, which I think had a lot of that same ideas about the sort of the desire of women juggling a lot to lose themselves in a kind of domestic fantasy where that's all you had to do. And I think what you're saying is really interesting, Alyssa, when you're talking about the aesthetic of it. It's also, you know, you could also think of it as like the Martha Stewart kind of model where you try to make everything super perfect at home, although she obviously is an incredibly hard-driving career woman.
Well, I first want to say that I don't think that anything Alyssa described enjoying doing herself or in taking pride in would, in my mind, make her a trad wife. And I also think it's important to point out that there are plenty of heterosexual couples where there is a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home dad, but where there is a stay-at-home mom and the power balance is still equal because the couple has made the joint decision that the best way that their house will function is that the mother's role will be predominantly running the house. I think we all know, or at least Alyssa and I know, that caring for small children is in itself a full-time and worthy job. So I think that being a trad wife is much less about baking beautiful bread or having beautiful home decor or spending time with your children. And it really is centered around the idea that that you are supporting a patriarchal system where your desire is to be cared for and to not have to worry your pretty little head about finances or about income. And it is limiting your role to only the home rather than viewing yourself as an equal partnership. So I do want to make that distinction because I wouldn't want women listening to this who had chosen to be stay-at-home moms to think that I or any of us were saying that the only way to achieve equality is to be a full-time worker outside of the house. I don't think that that's the case at all.
One thing I notice about this is that it seems really generational, this Tradwives thing. I mean, obviously, partly that's the form of something like TikTok, which has a younger audience and user base. But to what extent is this about a younger generation, do you think, finding this, sort of rediscovering these kinds of aesthetics, Monica?
There's an interesting conflation that is happening here. And I do see it more in the younger generation. I think it would be an interesting question for sociologists to look at how much of this was younger women looking at what previous generations had done and then reinterpreting it in a way that became a little bit twisted, a little bit off, a little bit misunderstanding of what the original goal had been. because what we're seeing is not let's have, you know, equal partnerships to make a beautiful home. What we're seeing is this modern life looks exhausting. You've convinced me that I don't want to be in it. And so I'm just going to stay home and make lovely TikTok videos.
And I think part of what's interesting about that is that I think is a desire that gets expressed in a lot of different ways in a lot of different cultures, right? There was this huge phenomenon in China in recent years where younger people started talking about lying flat and sort of refusing the professional trajectory that had been expected of them, in part because, you know, some aspects of Chinese society have been so unforgiving. There's basically no, you know, there's no equivalent to Social Security. There are enormous expectations that kids are supposed to take care of their parents and their kids. And so I feel like the tradwives trend jumps at all three of us because we are, you know, youngish working women with kids. But I think that sense of sort of opting out is more widespread. There is something that is unsatisfying about modern life to a lot of people in a lot of cultures. And I don't know where that's going to end up taking us, but...
Right. One thing that I found really interesting is some of this is about a kind of ultra-exaggerated heterosexual model, right? And you could almost see this as a, like, feminine flip side to misogynist influencers like Andrew Tate or somebody like that, right? So there's one way that it's that, but there's also a way that it just seems like resistance to capitalism on some level.
Yeah, when I saw online a lot of, there was a phrase that popped up again and again to the point that it almost started to feel like a motto where these women would write, "I dream of feminine leisure." And the idea of dreaming of leisure is a sort of radical statement in a time when we have been conditioned to dream of success and achievement and getting to the top. To just say, "I dream of leisure, I dream of it being easy," was really bold and startling for me to read in a lot of ways. And what I thought was interesting is that the women who were dreaming of this leisure were trying to find it via a relationship solution. They were trying to organize it in their own house rather than asking the questions that I think I came around to asking, which are, how could or should society help all of us have more leisure? What are the solutions that our country should be looking toward that could make life easier for all of us rather than for everyone having to ad hoc figure this out on their own?
Okay, I want to come back to that question of whether there are solutions to this thorny issue, which is, I know, something that Alyssa has thought a lot about too. But we have to take a quick break. More on this when we return.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Welcome back. I'm Amanda Katz, and this is Impromptu. So we were just talking about what solutions might exist to the extent that this is a problem of, Monica, as you say, leisure being something we can only dream of. And I think that is actually something that a lot of women and men relate to. There are a lot of women who are caring a lot. They're caring, you know, you need to earn the income for your family and also somehow take care of kids and keep a lot of balls in the air. And some of it is about a kind of like resistance to that capitalist mandate. But I wonder some of this, to some extent, how much of this could be solved in part with more leisure, in the sense of, what if there was more vacation? What if there was a better safety net? Alyssa, you've done a lot of thinking about this in some of your parenting columns, which think a lot about policy around parenting and for families in the U.S. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you think could help relieve some of this pressure?
So one thing I find really interesting about just sort of, and specifically about kind of cross-partisan discussions about family policy right now, is that there is this emerging, I wouldn't even say consensus because we're so far away from being able to actually get anything done in an incredibly dysfunctional Congress, but I'm seeing a conversation that is moving more towards the idea that we shouldn't just have a social safety net that gives people money, but that we should have a social safety net that gives people time. You know, a lot of discussions about social safety net programs in the United States over the past, I mean, literally the entire time all three of us have been alive, have been around work requirements in exchange for aid to parents. So, you know, there's a sense that the poor only deserve help if they demonstrate that they're making an effort to get themselves to a place where they don't need help. But one thing you start to see in conversations among people on the left, like Elliot Haspel, who's a really interesting childcare researcher, or folks on the right, like Patrick Brown, is a conversation about the idea that, like, what if we gave people a childcare stipend and they could use it either to pay for childcare while they worked or as a salary for stay-at-home parents? How can we get to a place where paid family leave when a child is born or adopted is available not just to people in salaried positions? How can we get to a place where there is sort of a right to time with your family? And I found that really fascinating, you know, seeing someone like Tim Carney from the American Enterprise Institute write that he thinks that there should be a puberty leave for parents. The idea that there's going to be a time when your kids, what your kids need is not necessarily more money and more activities, but they're going to need more of your time when they're going through this enormous transition. And so I found that really fascinating, both because it recognizes how hard parents work, but also because it recognizes sort of time and togetherness as currencies that are equally important as money.
That's really interesting. Monica, what did you find? You said in one place in your essay, you said, the solution to this messy moment in the history of gender and work is not to dream backward. The solution is to wonder what we might do about tomorrow. Did you see anybody turning up solutions, or did things occur to you that would be helpful?
I think a lot of what occurred to me are things that Alyssa has mentioned. I do think that increased vacation time that brought all of us more in line with what European countries are doing would benefit everyone's mental health. And I also think that we're talking about making things easier for women, but often I think the most effective policies are ones that target everyone or even men in particular. I think that the biggest step that this country could make toward this would be instituting parental leave, not only for moms, but for dads. I'll only speak for my own household. I know that my husband taking paternity leave when our daughter was born, which meant that for 4 months when I was already back at work, he was solely responsible for her care, meant that from the beginning, he knew how to be a partner who could change diapers, prepare food, prepare bottles, put her down for naps, things that would have been unheard of for a previous generation, we just take as a given. I never feel like he's babysitting our daughter when he's caring for her. I know that he's a competent caretaker in his own right. And I think that policies like that can empower men to enter the domestic sphere with more comfort and respect are policies that end up benefiting women and the whole family.
And there are ways to design policy that help bring about greater uptake and that sort of cultural shift towards men wanting to be more responsible. There are some European countries where both partners in a family get a set amount of total leave, but they sacrifice some of it if men don't take a sort of certain minimum leave. And I think that's, you know, I think that's, it would be ideal to get to a place where that wasn't necessary, but you kind of need to do both, because one thing we know for sure is that even when men have parental leave, the uptake is much lower than the sort of 100% that we would expect.
Right, making it an opt-out rather than an opt-in, making it the default.
Monica, some of what inspired this conversation and your piece was the trends you saw on TikTok, but it was also an article that got a lot of attention from New York Magazine's The Cut by a young woman who made the case for marrying an older man. What would you say to somebody like her who is embracing not just leisure, but also dependency on a man where he makes their decisions? Did you find yourself wanting to give her any advice?
The first way that I wanted to talk to her was in the very responsible, I hope you have access to your own money and your own finances and your own skill set, because life can change in a heartbeat, and not even because her husband might leave her, but because her husband might become injured or out of work, or any number of things in a heartbeat can change the way that we live our lives. And I think that it is smart for people of all genders to think about how they will be self-sufficient if it comes to that. So that's my practical advice. And my sort of more philosophical advice is that there are all kinds of ways for humans to be happy. And the life she's living might be one that indeed does make her happy. But she's also limiting herself and not allowing herself to see the full breadth of human experiences. And I think that just philosophically, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you want to know fully what you were capable of in many realms of life, not just in the one that you've pigeonholed yourself into?
And I feel like I might say something slightly different, but just that life is long and you don't know what you're going to want or what it's going to bring. You know, when I had my first kid, I found the idea of slowing down or refocusing or having new demands on my time really difficult. And our colleague Ruth Marcus just said to me, she's like, your career is long, right? I mean, if this is a period when it plateaus, that's okay. Just make sure that you have options for, you know, financially, emotionally, career-wise, what you want might change, and that's okay.
I think on that note about leaving ourselves all the options, I think there's something very compelling in that. Thank you both so much for joining me for this conversation. I really enjoyed it and found it very interesting. And I hope that you all experience some moments of leisure in the days to come, feminine or not.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for having me, Amanda. Talk to you again.
This episode was produced by Hadley Robinson, edited by Damir Marusik, David Von Dreely, and Allison Michaels, and mixed by Emma Munger. Chris Rukan designed our art. Special thanks to Millie Mitra, Nick Safin, Granita Jablonski, and David Shipley. If you'd like to read Monica's essay on trad wives and the dream of feminine leisure, or the piece from The Cut that we talked about, check out the links in our show notes. Find Impromptu wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like the show, please follow us, rate us, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.